All right.
My name is Aaliyah, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm so excited to be here, but also just as nervous. So bear with me. It's been a few, it's been a little while since I've spoken, but I always tell new girls when I'm about to, you know, sponsor somebody that, also I tie-dyed with my kids like today, which was probably a mistake, and now I'm like, my hands are all colorful. But anyway, if you happen to notice that, we were tie-dyeing. I tell new girls that I am going to get just as much or more out of this partnership, you know, when I'm going to sponsor somebody as you are, because it reminds me what I need to be doing if I'm asking, you know, a new girl to read this or take this action or call your sponsor. Like, I need to be doing those same things. And I think that that's true of, like, speaking here tonight. You know, it first of all, I get to meet people that are new to sobriety and recovery, and it puts me right back, I don't know, I get to see my own recovery with fresh eyes. So thank you for having me. I'm going to talk about my own story, and I was told I have, like, I'm going to try to do 40 minutes. And also, like, is this a cool volume? Is everybody good with? Because I feel like I'm real loud, but I think it's good. Okay, so what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. I said, I'm an Aaliyah, I'm an alcoholic, and an addict. So that's another thing I really wanted to hit home tonight, because I go to a lot of AA meetings, and I was told that I could talk about drugs and alcohol, so I'm going to do that. Addict, alcoholic. I got my sobriety date is December 22nd, 2010. And I'll go back to the very beginning, but spend very little time, you know, on my childhood, because it was pretty average American, two-parent, middle-class upbringing. You know, nothing so special that pertains, I think, to this disease. I'm sure there's all kinds of stuff, but I want to get to what it was like and what happened. And so I had my first drink when I was 16, kind of a late starter, I think, but I felt like I made up for lost time really quickly. So 16, first drink, pretty unremarkable. A lot of people talk about their first drink and like this white light experience and like they were in love. But, you know, like it was cool, whatever, vodka in a water bottle. Thought it tasted like fire water or something. I don't know. But quickly I discovered that I liked it and that it was fun and that I thought I should keep doing it a lot. So I did. High school, you know, drinking on the weekends, smoking on the weekends, and then it bleeds into the week and, you know, Friday and then Monday. And graduated from high school, went out of, you know, to a different city to go to college. And one semester in, I just couldn't pack it. You know, I, by that time was partying a lot. And, that was really important to me. And I always had this idea that like, there's time to, you know, go back to school. And even though I would have told you, like, that's the most important thing to me, like my behavior showed that it wasn't, I was just, you know, having a good time. And, I did make notes, which is, this is the first time I've ever made notes, but I thought, I'm so nervous, I'm just gonna make some notes. So bear with me if I'm referring back to my badly handwritten notes. And so what happened was, you know, I moved back to my hometown, and my drinking and my using at this point is, it's not really getting out of hand yet, but it's regular. It's like at least, you know, maybe 2 days a week I'm not drinking. And by that time I had started getting high. So other things, you know, I won't go into too much detail because I want to try and touch on the singleness or stay to the singleness of purpose that we talk about in the rooms, but I was getting high as much as I was getting drunk, if not more, and my drug of choice was heroin, and I was thinking about on the way over here, I was like, I don't even know what the kids are doing these days, but I like to shoot it. I was like telling myself, I'm like, maybe that's old fashioned, like I don't know what people are doing now. It's probably not. People probably like to still shoot dope. But I like to do that. And I started doing that at about age 20. And so around this time, while I was out there and in, you know, before sobriety, I was married and divorced. And at that time, I had met my then husband. And so, you know, if my addiction was like here, his was like already up here. And I would just, you know, like hurried up to catch up with him. And not on purpose, you know, we don't consciously make those decisions that we're like gonna just throw it all away or we're going to make things worse. We don't think, hey, I think that's a pretty good idea. That just happens, you know? And I had this idea that things kept happening to me, like bad things kept happening to me and life was getting worse as I was making these poor and poorer decisions. But it wasn't, you know, happening to me. I was making bad decisions based on the fact that I suffer from the disease of alcoholism and addiction. But at that time, like, I didn't know any of this and didn't have the vocabulary for it and was just like, why do bad things keep happening to me? And I just want to feel good and I just want to be happy. You know, I was 20, right? So, like, that's, I think, what we all think. But by now I'm seeing, like, my peers either graduate from college or go to grad school or get a really good job or they're getting married. And I just feel like everybody seems to be not having like the same struggles I am. Like, and those struggles being like not able to hold down a job, you know, working somewhere for 4 months or 4 weeks, you know, and, could not ever stay in one place to live for very long. You know, I have had like, you know, 15 addresses between, you know, for like a 2 year span or whatever. I think that's pretty regular for us or something. I don't know. I, you know, was like always changing my address at the post office and it's like such a pain. And sometimes I didn't even do that, you know, cause like, anyway. So, you know, I'm still drifting, like waiting tables. I was always waiting tables, working at the bar, 20, 21, 22. And by this time my family had begun to just, I don't want to say like they didn't understand me because that kind of, I feel like that's selfish. Like it was that they were just bewildered by my behavior. I was making these choices that to them, their daughter, a non, you know, they're not alcoholics, they're not addicts. They're like, what are you doing? You know? And I just kept up like making excuses like, well, this, I laugh because I always used to say like the economy is bad. Like that's why I don't have a job. And I think the economy was like at its worst at that. I don't know what year that was, like 2008, that it had been in like 10 years. But that is not like why I didn't have a job. Right. So, you know, yeah. So and then things got worse. Right. So they're bad. They get worse. Then they get even worse, and by that now I have to get high every day because, and by this time it's not fun, you know. So I have to get high, and there's no joy, and I'm not enjoying it, and I'm not seeing my friends to have some drinks and have a good time, and you know, go to barbecues or go to the bar. Like none of that is happening right now at this point. Like I don't want to get high, but I have to. And I think, and I remember distinctly the feeling of waking up and thinking I cannot get high today because like I have to go to work or I have to meet my parents because I said I was going to be here, you know, to meet this person or whatever. And I also could not not do that. So it was just this terrible cycle. And I'm starting to feel like cornered. And by now I know I have a problem, right? Because, you know, if it was just drinking, I could have like chalked it up to a lot of things and made a lot more excuses. But by now, nobody like does illicit drugs recreationally too much, you know, so I can't really say, well, like, oh, I just like use heroin socially, so it's probably fine. And so I'm done with the days where I can kid myself into this is just like something normal and I'm like sowing my wild oats or whatever. So I tried a couple 12-step meetings. Oh, and I'm from Toledo, Ohio, which is where I got sober. So, you know, there is where I was going to meetings and, you know, I thought, oh my gosh, no, I know I have a problem, but this is not, I don't think I need to get this crazy and like, you know, join a 12-step program. And then things got even worse, you know, and I started hustling and selling, you know, my possessions and just doing all kinds of illegal things that we do to get money to fund my disease. I would have, you know, and again, like I just have to stress, I guess, the main thing is like not really like how much, like how many times I went to jail or how many jobs I lost or how many times I made my mom cry or whatever. It's like that's not what, you know, decides like, are you an addict? Are you an alcoholic? Cause like only you know if you are, right? But what I tell, you know, new girls, like it's how desperate did you feel? Did you have the choice, you know, to drink and use or, did you feel like you could put it down and walk away? Or did you feel like trapped and forced to have to do that, to continue going on or like to go about your day? The other thing I wanted to say is like, it's so fun to see all these babies and kids in this meeting. This is the most kids I think I've seen in a meeting. I know this is just a different, it's not like a regular meeting, but it's great. So have little ones. And they're not even that little. So this is, anyway. So that's why I have notes, because I get distracted. What? Okay. So yeah, I never, you know, that feeling of like being helpless and trapped and not able to make any decisions for myself. I didn't even feel like, because, you know, looking back, like I could have said, I'm going to put this down and I'm going to leave this situation. I'm going to move and I'm going to go back and stay with my parents. And like I felt, even though I had the ability to do that, I felt like I didn't. I felt like I couldn't do that. And I also felt like I had no idea what to do and no idea how I could work this out. And by this, I mean like my life was in shambles, right? So, just that total desperation. I also felt like I was just, you know, surviving, eating, sleeping, going to the bathroom, repeat. Like that was my life. Get high, eating, sleep, get high, you know, whatever, in no particular order, for months and then for a couple years. And, you know, at one point I realized like I have no calendar. I have no future. I had no plans with anybody to say like, well, by this time I need to get clean on this day because I need to do something with, because nobody wanted to make plans with me or nobody expected me to be able to follow through with said plans. And so what happened at around this time was I got pregnant. And at that point I thought this could not get any, like, this is the worst thing that could happen, is that like, I felt trapped and now I know that this is not going to end well, because I'm either going to go to jail and lose my baby, or I'm going to die and lose my baby, or I'm going to lose my baby and then what good? I mean, I just, you know, there was just so much, all that was fueling me was like pain and desperation. And for the next 8 months, the next 8 months I just suffered and got high. And I was not a woman that could put it down. Like we talk about, like a lot of people take breaks for when they're pregnant, or I hear women speak and they're like, I was able to stay sober for 9 months. I was not able to stay sober probably for 48 hours during my pregnancy. And the shame and the guilt that comes along with that is huge too. So all the while telling myself, like I would wake up every day and be like, this is the day I cannot get high. And I could not get high. So, or drink, you know. And the other thing, and I'll get back to that, but I had my daughter in August 2010. She's almost nine. She has a birthday this month, and which is crazy. But and what happened was that the there was an anonymous call made to social services, and they visited the hospital. And long story short, custody was immediately removed, like effective immediately, basically. And my daughter was 6 days old, and I stood in front of the court, the judge, you know, and they removed custody, and she was placed with a family member. And so, again, at this time, I'm thinking this is the worst thing that could have possibly happened. But what came out of that was that I had that gift of desperation, and somebody was like, here, these are your choices, you know. And by that time, then I thought, well, this is the worst thing that has happened, because now I'm wrapped up in the system. But then I had some ideas, I guess, of what I could do. And by ideas, I meant I had choices. You know, I could either go to court, go to IOP, go to meetings, really give sobriety like a real shot, or I could go off into the distance and lose my daughter. I didn't want to lose my daughter. So I went to meetings. You know, I had a counselor, probably like a lot of you guys in this room. I don't really know, you know, but it felt like, I don't know if any of you can relate to this, but it felt like having, for the first time in 5 years, like a full-time job, to where I had to like wake up, report to somebody else, call somebody else, make an appointment for something, get a ride to some, you know, it was like a full-time schedule, whereas before all I had to do was like find money to, you know, get right or whatever. And so I threw myself into the best I knew of what I was supposed to do, because the judge was like, do this. And I was like, okay. So I did that for many months, and I struggled for the my sobriety date. My daughter was born in August, and I didn't get sober until December. And those were the worst 3 months of like this purgatory of not, you know, being able to stay sober, because I just didn't get it yet. Like, I didn't know how. But also being faced with the harsh reality, like, this is the jumping off point. So December 22nd, first day of sobriety. But then I had some exposure by that point to like the program, and I had been in court a lot by then, and I was just ready. I was ready then. So, 2 months later, I moved into a transitional housing facility that was not specifically for alcoholics and addicts, but it was geared towards women who are victims of domestic violence, which is another story. But that's how I ended up in the place where I was able to put together some real time. And it was like, that was the best decision I ever made, was to move in there, because I could work at my recovery, and I did. You don't need to worry about her. So, like, she's fussy. Like, it's, I have an 8-year-old, a 4-year-old, 3-year-old, and a 16-month-old. So, like, this is like vacation right now. My kids are at home. My husband's putting them to bed. I'm like, nobody's crying. Anyway, so transitional housing, and you know, it's so overwhelming. It was so overwhelming starting from the bottom up, because I felt like, how am I gonna do all the, like, I had no driver's license and no car, and like, no, how am I going to get my kid back when I have to have a car and a driver's license and, you know, X amount of money, and I have to prove to the judge, but I also, you know, I'm starting from ground zero. So it was just a long, it felt like the longest time, you know, but that year went fast, and I got custody back in August of 2011. So my daughter, like I said, is going to turn 9 this year. So that was what happened. That's how I got, you know, into a life of sobriety. And I remember just a couple quick things from, like, that time. I remember going to meetings and sitting in a meeting and thinking, I can't believe these people are saying they have, like, 4 years of sobriety, or, like, 5 years or 10 years. Like, there's no way. Like, there's no way that anybody would, like, and I couldn't conceive of that anybody would stay around that long. Like, why would you do that? I thought, why would you? I'm like, you're lying. You don't have 10 years. But, you know, and that's just like one of those things I look back on now, and I truly felt that way. It was just a very, you know, the fog had not lifted for me. It took a few months for the fog to lift, and it lifted in layers. You know, first I got sober and I was just like, oh my God, there's this bright light in my face, and it's just, you know, I don't know like what to do. And then you just try to put one foot in front of the other, you know. And 6 months, I don't recommend waiting 6 months to get a sponsor, but I didn't know what I didn't know. And I waited 6 months and I got a sponsor. And she took me through the 12 steps. And like I said, for that first year, I went to AA. Can everybody hear me okay? Yeah. Cool. Okay. I went to AA and NA, because like I said, drugs and alcohol. And all this to say also that for a while I thought, well, I know I'm an addict, but I'm not sure if I'm an alcoholic. And what does that mean? Like, can I drink? Because before I got sober, I would tell myself, I really believe that I was clean if I wasn't getting high, but I could drink because I'm not an alcoholic, because it's not my drug of choice. It was just, like I said, layers of fog lifting over a long period of time. But I had this delusion that I was clean if I was not smoking weed or getting high on any other drugs, taking pills, dope, whatever. But what would happen during those little, this is just if anybody can relate to this or identify with this, those little periods of clean time is that I would be a normal person, productive member of society, till 5, 7, 9 o'clock p.m. and then I would get shit-faced. And I could not drink. Like, if I wasn't doing dope, I had to drink. And my point is, like, I had to put something in my body to alter my mood. So if I wasn't using, I had to drink. And when I think back about that, I absolutely believe that I have the disease of alcoholism and addiction. So anyway, I went to AA and NA for about a year. And I found that it was kind of tough to work two programs. And I thought, well, I'm not getting two sponsors and two different programs. That's like bananas. I got enough stuff to do. I'm like, you know, going 4 times a week to pee in a cup and, you know, things like that. And like, so I'm gonna stick with, I decided to stick with AA, because at that point I was living in a rural area and the program was stronger there. So I just got an AA sponsor, work the 12 steps. So what it's like now, you know, that was my first year or two of sobriety. Oh my gosh, I think I'm talking too fast. I'm gonna slow it down. I get excited and I'm like nervous. So I'm like, da-da-da-da-da. I moved to Austin in 2012. So, you know, I got divorced right before I got sober. And then in 2011, I met my now husband in the program in Ohio. And we decided to move to Austin. He got a job opportunity here. I'd been sober about 18 months, and I was just starting to, like, really repair my relationship with my family. And they were like, you're nuts. Why do you want to, like, you want to move to Texas? I had never been to Austin. I thought, I'm going to move to Austin. And they were really skeptical, and as they should have been, and as any parent, you know, now looking back would have been. My daughter was about 18 months old. But we moved to Austin for my husband's job, and Austin's been good to us. You know, we got plugged in right away when we got here, and my daughter was two at the time, and so we would alternate going to meetings like every other night, just there's not a lot of meetings. It's easy to take like a three-year-old to when they're like 12 months, you can give them a bottle, but by the time they want to walk and they want to run, and it's like, I feel like a lot of other people don't mind, but like, I can't hear anything when my three-year-old's like running. Anyway. So I got a new sponsor right away. I moved to Austin. It's a different city. Got a new sponsor. Did the steps again. I wanted to say that the first year of sobriety, I think I probably went to 5 meetings a week on average, you know, and then the second year, maybe 2 to 4 meetings. And, you know, by the third year, I felt like I don't have to go to a meeting every day, but I was also working the steps with a sponsor. And starting to sponsor myself. So I was actively doing something in the program, not all the time, but like regularly is my point. Just for those of you who are like trying to figure out like, well, what does this look like for the next step for me? Doesn't have to look like this, but just in case you're wondering, what I did. In 2014, I got married, and in 2015, I had my daughter, second daughter. And that kind of was like the beginning of a new era of life, I guess, because, you know, that was like, I felt like that was like my re-entry into the real world, sort of. The real world being regular people that can drink like regular people and not us. Because to that point, like, I'm in recovery, my husband's in recovery, we're going to meetings all the time, our friends are in recovery, we're hanging out with people that are in recovery on the weekend. And then I'm like hit just into this sort of other world of like, I'm a new mom and I have a new baby and a 4-year-old and she's going into kindergarten, you know, 5-year-old and she's going into kindergarten. So anyway, my daughter was born and we thought, you know, I think we want to have another one, maybe go for 3. And like literally like the next day I found out I was pregnant. So my son was born in 2016. Brandy knows me because this is kind of like a running joke sort of among our friends. Not a joke, but like, so yeah. So my son was born in 2016. And at that point, you know, I'm still going to meetings. I'm active in recovery. I have a home group. I forgot to mention that my home group, now I know I'm talking fast. My home group is A Way Out in South Austin, Monday nights. It's a women's meeting. It's a good meeting. Ladies, if you ever check it out, Bethany Lutheran Church. You know, and I still at that point had a sponsor and I'm sponsoring, but less, you know, cause I have my baby and then my son's born and my son's birth was super traumatic, medically and for me and for him, and he was in the NICU, and that was just like it was a difficult time that I mentioned because I had to rely on the tools that I learned here and apply them to a part of my life that wasn't not drinking. It was like, how do I deal with being a mom of a sick infant in the NICU and having a toddler who was like learning to walk, and my daughter was 5. And how do I stay afloat? You know, because like, I have to say this too, that the first few months, the first year of sobriety, I wouldn't say it was easy at all. It wasn't easy, but it was simple. Like I didn't, after a couple months of really applying, like really taking it seriously, like I didn't feel that like I got a drink. Like, I didn't feel that like monkey on my back anymore. There were still challenges and there was always like fleeting thoughts, but it didn't feel like in my face anymore. So honestly, about after 8 weeks, because a lot of people ask, like, when did you stop feeling like you wanted to, you know, use or get high or drink all the time? And I honestly feel like after a couple months, it got a lot different. But by that time in my life, you know, I'm 5-6 years sober. I really rarely had that, like, oh, what do you call it? Just instinct or, you know, that feeling. But you still, like, life happens and it's still hard. So, like, what do you do? By that time, like, I'm not answering to a judge anymore. I'm not going to IOP. I was in this program called Hope Court. I'm sure they should have something similar here. It's for parents. All of that was gone, graduated, done. I'm, like, on my own, right? So I'm relying on the tools I have, because I don't do well without tools. Like, I need structure and I need a plan, right? So my plan is the steps and calling my sponsor and calling sober women and staying afloat that way is my point. So my son had done, he was okay. So got back to the story. He was okay. He had a couple blood transfusions, a blood issue. And we brought him home, and over the next few months, we were at the specialist office all the time, and, you know, he was just needing a little extra care. And we had also been told by our doctors that it would be, like, if we were to have any more children, they would likely have this same issue, and it would be worse, potentially, probably, in subsequent pregnancies. So we agreed, we're done having kids, two girls, we had a little boy, we're done. So took some steps medically to ensure that we would not have any more children, and found out I was pregnant again in April of the next year. So my son was 15 months old, and that hit me like a ton of bricks, you know. I felt like, you know, I did some hurt, like I got sober again, you know, with this whole story, and I don't know, I just felt like I had a lot of challenges. And this was also a challenge, you know, and I just had to lean into the tools that I had learned over the past, you know, 7 years. And I was calling my sponsor all the time, and I was in fear, you know, like we as alcoholics and addicts, I think, you know, the book talks about fear being the root of all of our problems and being fueled by fear and, you know, pride and selfishness and self-centeredness, and all of those things were like this, you know, or like I would wake up in the middle of the night and just, like, I couldn't sleep, and I would wake up, like, sweating, afraid about my baby, you know, afraid about, like, what if this, and what if I have to have another emergency C-section, and what if, like, and I couldn't even, like, say it, but I was like, what if he doesn't survive? It was my biggest fear, and I was calling my sponsor all the time. And she was just walking me through writing fear inventory and praying and helping others. And that did help for a time, you know, until, like, it's the same thing with, like, drinking. It helps until we find ourselves up against the wall and we got to do something again. Like, we have to keep working at it. And I felt like I was calling her, like, every 36 hours with the same problem. I don't know if anybody has that issue. But I'm like, hey, it's me again. Super scared. Going crazy. Not in those words, but anyway. So, you know, just really having to put into action a lot of the stuff that I said I was going to do to keep sober, you know, like I said I was going to go to any lengths. And so this was a point where I felt like, you know, I told God, I was like, I'm done having babies. And God was like, no, you're not. Get back in there. Have another one. So I mean, that's kind of a joke, but I really felt like, you know, talk about God's will, you know, sometimes we question it, but like at that point, like I wasn't supposed to get pregnant. I got pregnant. I was like, okay, let's do this. But it was scary. My son was born in April of last year, and long story short, he did not have all of the medical problems that we were worried that he was going to have. And I can't believe it. Like, you know, he did have some issues at first, like some of the same issues as my older son who just turned 3. On his 3rd birthday, the baby, who is now like 15 months, like basically was just like walking and like ate it on the ground. And now he has like this giant Harry Potter gash on his like head. And we had to get, you know, go to the urgent care on the 3-year-old's birthday. But these are like the best problems to have, you know. They're real like high class first world problems. And I just would not. Okay, so trying to. Oh, I'm still like so early. I was real. Okay. I was like, I'm going to have a 24-minute lead because that's what I know. But then I'm like, no, I can make it longer. But anyway, so I'm like starting to wrap it up. And you said 8:20, right? Okay. That's like 15 minutes from now. I feel like I've just been going. And anyhow, I do have I have a couple more things I want to say. I would not have any of my children if not for the program. So that's one like blaringly obvious thing, you know, when we talk about the gifts of this program. And also one thing I was going to say earlier is that the promises that the book talks about, you know, the ninth step and the tenth step promises, like they started to materialize for me in my life, in my sobriety pretty early on. You know, like I got a job when I was a few months sober, and within a year I had a car and a job, and I got my daughter back, and friends and a mended relationship with my family. So like good things were happening to me again. We talk about like things happen to us, but you know, it's God, and then you have to make good choices. You put those together and you know, good things happen. So anyway, the promises started to come true, but if I wasn't like continuing to work for it, I would still feel my disease, if that makes sense. Like, if I wasn't, you know, working with a sponsor, if I wasn't praying at night, if I wasn't reaching out to my higher power and trying to make space to be quiet and sit with God, you know, I'd have a good life, like I'd have all these things, but I wouldn't have any peace and serenity. And I would be white knuckling it, I feel like. You know, I would be raising these kids fueled by fear and pride and selfishness, you know, and some of that still comes out because it's just like, that's the way it goes, you know. But I'm trying to treat my disease, basically, is what I'm trying to say. I'm still 8 and a half years out trying to treat this disease, you know, but it's not like, I don't want to make it out like it's some struggle, like I'm, you know, like it's difficult every day, because it's not, it's wonderful, you know. And I have these kids, and now, you know, I'm a stay-at-home mom, so I was working for several years until my first son was born, and then I was like, this is way too much. So I'm lucky enough, you know, I'm a stay-at-home mom, and I never thought I would be a stay-at-home mom. Looking back, you know, when I think about what it was like, I didn't think about being a mom. I thought about not being sad. Like, I thought about not hurting, you know, and I thought about trying to maybe, like, graduate from college or something. Like, I didn't have any idea. I didn't have any plan. I was just drifting, and I did not have, like, people talk about a 5-year plan or a 10-year plan. Like, I just had no concept of that. And so, you know, you may have heard it before, and I've heard it a lot, but it's absolutely true for me that if I had been able to draft, like, the best, like, on day one of my sobriety, if somebody had said, like, write out what you want your life to be like at any time in the future and, like, your best possible, like, unicorn life or whatever. And had I done that, had I written that out, it wouldn't be half as wonderful as my actual real life is now. Like, I couldn't have, you know, I think I would have asked for things or hoped for things or wished for things, like, in the beginning, like, that first year, those first few months, I would have thought, I don't want to feel sick anymore, ever. Like, have you guys ever thought that? You know, like, I just don't want to ever feel like shit all the time. That would be great. That would be awesome. You guys, like, I can't even tell you, like, how much better it is, you know, and even at, like, 1 year sober, you know, and then two or whatever. And I don't want to get into, like, the whole, like I said, too many details. But, yeah, so what I do now, I have 4 little kids, don't make it to a lot of meetings, but I do go to one a week, one, maybe two. I have a meeting at my house. Some women that I am closer to in recovery come to me because it's hard for me to get out, you know, with the kids. And so we do that. I work the steps still with the sponsor, and I sponsor women. And one thing I wanted to say is that, like, if you're struggling with any particular, and I don't know, like, everybody I think here is at a different spot in their in their steps or in their recovery, but if you are stuck on a step, or if you're like wondering about, like, well, I just don't really know what that means, or like, how should I do that? And like, I want to do it right because, like, I don't want to get high or whatever. Get a sponsor if you don't have a sponsor, and talk to your sponsor about it, and just be honest. Like, I don't really understand, you know. And then if you're still not satisfied with the answer, widen your horizon and go ask another sober alcoholic, and keep asking, you know, because I was confused about a lot. Like, I think I spent way too much time trying to understand step two when I first came in here, and I was like, I want to do it right. And, you know, I don't know how I, like, heard this message on a particular day, but there was somebody in the rooms then that was like, stop thinking about it so hard. Like, just do it, and then move on. He's like, if you don't understand it, just do it and move on. I was like, okay. So then I did step three. And what happened was I eventually, like, the fog continued to lift, and I feel like, and also step two says came to believe, too. So, like, it doesn't say, like, believed, period. It says came to believe. So, like, I'm a work in progress is, like, my whole point. So another thing like that I felt like was really difficult to do in the beginning, even now, is pray. My house, yeah, I have these, like I said, 8, 4, 3, 1. My house is never quiet. Like, if it's quiet, I'm sleeping. You know, it's like, I call it the crazy house, the loud house. We're the loud house on the block. And, you know, I'm not good at being quiet because I'm not used to quiet. I'm used to chaos. It was like chaos before I got sober, and it was like never quiet after I got sober, but it's like a happy chaos now. But my point is, like, it's so hard to get some quiet and peace and quiet and get with God. And even like when I have a few minutes to myself, my brain is still like going and going, and it's really hard to just shut up and listen and see if there's anything that like my higher power might possibly be telling me. So my point is, like, I work at it. And I just try to be quiet for a few minutes in the morning and, you know, practice step 11. And, you know, praying is easier for me than meditating because I, like, I'm good at, like, asking for stuff. But sometimes it's harder to just, like, really shut up. And then step 12, another, like, you know, thing, you know, trying to work with others and put myself out there and say, hey, I'm sober, I'm willing to sponsor you if you're willing to work, you know, if you want to do the steps. I'm close, almost. 8, 12. Yeah, you guys, that's my story. I was so nervous to speak tonight, and I feel like this is going to sound bad, but this is, like, good dope. Like, coming up here and, like, okay, so I get so nervous before I'm going to speak so I can't eat, like, all night. And then I get, like, I leave and I'm just, like, it's like that runner's high, you know, people who exercise get, or, like, this is the deal. So I've gotten, like, so much out of being able to share my story with you guys. And thanks for having me.